We want to acknowledge that we are recording on the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabeg, Mississauga, Huron-Wendat, and Seneca peoples. We also want to acknowledge that none of today's speakers identify as members of the Indigenous peoples community. We are not speaking on behalf of these communities, but rather as allies. After today's episode, we hope you understand how pharmacists can help the reconciliation of our communities. Lastly, there are many useful resources mentioned in today's episode, and you can find all relevant links at offthescriptshow.com.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the first interview of season three of Off the Script. We're back. We're fully in form. And we're on a new theme in our season, which is the future of pharmacy.
Yeah, so this season's a lot different because right now we're recording in the middle of COVID. So everyone's wearing masks and staying distanced. But today we have two very special guests with us. The first is Tiana Tilley, who is the Director of Pharmacy Innovation and Professional Affairs at Whole Health Pharmacy Partners. Tiana has practiced in community, industry, and hospital pharmacy, and she is passionate about optimizing the role of pharmacists and providing patient-centered care. Max Yagchi is working as a complaints officer at the Ontario College of Pharmacists. Max co-founded Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health, whose mission is to improve pharmacies' awareness of healthcare barriers faced by the Indigenous community, to overcome these barriers through greater Indigenous cultural competence, and to increase representation of Indigenous people in pharmacy. Tiana and Max collaborated to create the NIHB Optimization Program, which we will discuss at length today. So, how are you two doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm well. And another interesting fact is that today Fizan and I have to share a mic, so it'll be a little bit of a challenge, but we'll overcome it.
I think we'll manage. And how about you, Tiana? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having us today.
All right. So before we get started on the NIHB optimization program, we just wanted to do a quick little backgrounder on what the PAIH and what Whole Health Pharmacy Partners is. So Max, what was your involvement in creating the Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health at the Faculty of Pharmacy?
Yeah, so myself and another student named Narth Shree, we co-founded Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health in 2018. And since then, I've sort of been leading it. We've had three cohorts worth of students in our, as our execs. And what we do, as Chris mentioned, we're hoping to bring awareness to barriers in healthcare faced by Indigenous persons. Also to overcome these barriers through greater Indigenous cultural competency for pharmacy students. We've been able to do this by connecting pharmacy students with Indigenous cultural events around the city, by posting resources and educational material that pharmacy students can refer to, and also by hosting healthcare workshops where pharmacy students actually go into local Indigenous centers and present to their members. And for us, as you mentioned, the NIHB Optimization Program has been one of these projects where we're hoping that it'll act towards better Indigenous cultural competency for pharmacy students as well.
That's amazing that you've managed to have that from the ground up and be so successful for three cohorts worth.
Thank you.
And Tiana, how about you? Could you tell us a little bit more about Whole Health Pharmacy Partners?
Yeah, so Whole Health Pharmacy Partners is a banner of independent pharmacies located predominantly across Ontario and Alberta, but we're really excited because we just expanded to New Brunswick, BC, and Saskatchewan. And in general, our focus is on patient-centered care and really a focus on programs that are health promotional in nature, so things like mental health. And in the last year or so, I'd say, we started focusing on ensuring our pharmacies are able to really support their communities, specifically with a focus on Indigenous health and making sure our pharmacists have that cultural competence.
Absolutely, that's great.
I think one term that we've thrown around a little bit is cultural competence. I was wondering if one of you guys could describe it in detail, because I think it's something that not everyone is aware of in their, you know, daily goings on about.
So, you know, there are groups and organizations that their business is to provide and, you know, consult other organizations on improving Indigenous cultural competence. So they're, I guess, the professionals. They would be considered the professionals, and they might have their own definition on this. But for me, it's more so a pharmacy student or a pharmacy professional engaging in patient care with an Indigenous patient without inadvertently offending them or activating any type of past trauma that they've experienced personally or through their heritage. And so for us, we believe that by connecting pharmacy students with resources that provide some background, some context into what's happened historically and what's currently occurring in Indigenous policy in Canada, that they have the awareness to sort of behave and word their questions and the things that they say in a way where it is culturally safe or culturally comfortable for Indigenous clients.
I think as pharmacists, there's a lot we can do to enhance our knowledge about Indigenous history in Canada. In our schooling, both in high school and in university, there's not as much education in this area. So I think for at least right now, it's really on us to learn about that history and what's happened in Canada. And so I would say part of Indigenous cultural competence is doing that training and reading books by Indigenous authors and really understanding what's going on in Indigenous communities right now across the country.
I think that's great because that kind of heads towards our next question, which is recognizing what the gap in care is as pharmacists or as healthcare professionals. Because yes, we are trained to understand the patient that's in front of us, but maybe we have to look a little bit more beyond that and understanding what the history is of the patients that we have. So could you just speak a little bit more to what we can do better for our patients and what the gap in care is?
So I think a first thing to probably let listeners know is that Indigenous residents of Canada include three groups. So that's First Nations, Inuit, and Métis residents of Canada. And when we look at Canada's history, we have a history of racism in the country. We have the residential school system, for example, that caused a lot of trauma and even intergenerational trauma, where the impacts can even be seen on people who didn't personally experienced the residential school system, but had family members who did. There's also the 60s scoop, which you can learn about more in some of the resources that will be talked about in this podcast. And when we look at the health inequities in the healthcare system and systemic racism, that actually comes out in the life expectancy of Indigenous residents of Canada. So the life expectancy of First Nations people is 7 to 15 years shorter than that of the rest of Canada's population. So really important that pharmacists do our part in addressing this through various initiatives to reduce barriers to care. I think there's a lot of different levels of the answers to this question. I think in general there's systemic racism and really overt racism, but there's also microaggressions and being aware of some of the biases that we have going into patient interactions. I think in pharmacy, one of the things that stood out to me was Whole Health hosted a Indigenous Peoples of Canada mental health webinar back in January, which Chris was also involved in. And when we were speaking with one of our speakers, Kira Findey, who's a First Nations pharmacist in Saskatchewan, she actually mentioned that she had had fellow colleagues who almost acted as a barrier to patient care because the patients had come in looking for OTCs that were covered through the NIHB program, but the pharmacist kind of doubted them or kind of questioned it. And that's when I think I realized that I also didn't know enough about this program and that I thought a lot of pharmacists probably didn't. So one of the gaps in care is even having that understanding of NIHB coverage so that we can increase access to medications for clients of the NIHB program.
Yeah, and I would add to that by saying that, you know, as pharmacists and pharmacy providers, we have some awareness of the healthcare barriers and social determinants of health that affect Indigenous patients. We also have some knowledge or awareness of some of the natural health products used in Indigenous cultures. But I think that's where that's like the limit of our understanding. And by exploring these themes and the factors that contribute to those social determinants of health, but also better understanding some of the natural health products. We've heard through the feedback in our work that, you know, tobacco use traditionally in Indigenous cultures is not the same as smoking cessation. And so really just understanding those nuances where a pharmacy learner who's very excited to provide smoking cessation counseling might not fully appreciate that traditional or a cultural use of tobacco is not the same as a smoking disorder. By exploring these themes further, we can provide a type of safe care. I understand that pharmacy learners are often unsure where to start. You know, what do they consult? And part of that is that there's no resources or education that's tailored to pharmacy practice in providing care for Indigenous patients until some of the work that Tiana and Whole Health Pharmacy have been doing and the work that Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health has undertaken.
Yeah, I think it's really important, all the points you guys brought up. Basically, there's more to a patient than what we just see as pharmacists a lot of the time, which is just what drugs they're taking and what DTPs we see in front of us. It's a lot about evaluating the patient as a whole and seeing what factors surrounding them socially or otherwise can also affect their health. So that's super important, because I think as we kind of go on in the season, we're going to be talking about how dispensing is not the only thing that we as pharmacists can do for our patients, and there's a lot more services that we can provide.
One of the things that also came up in the feedback for our survey, which we'll talk about, is right along those lines, Chris, which is that having that informed cultural competence helps make pharmacists make recommendations that are more realistic to the patient. One example was making a recommendation for a Mediterranean diet, because I know in school we learn a lot about that in heart health and things like that, but realizing, is that a realistic and culturally informed recommendation for potentially an Indigenous patient?
Yeah, not everyone can go to a grocery store and grab Mediterranean-like foods whenever they want. It's not really realistic.
And in the remote north, groceries are a lot more expensive and scarce. And so in those communities, hunting and gathering still plays a role in their food sources. And that's another thing that pharmacy learners, I think, would be interested in knowing more about.
So I think we've talked a lot about the different factors that play into health as a whole for our patients. And then one of the tools that we mentioned that Max and Tiana worked together to make was the NIHB optimization program. So could you guys speak a little bit about how this program works and how it kind of incorporates some of the tools that pharmacists have that we can use to better the lives of our patients?
Yeah, so the NIHB optimization program, one of the biggest components of it, I would say, is an infographic that Pay and Whole Health worked together on developing. Essentially, we looked at a lot of the information that NIHB has available online, but is quite text heavy and can be a lot for community pharmacists and other pharmacists who have really busy workloads to be aware of. So we tried to make it into a more visual infographic representation with the key points highlighted. So that was made for both a patient-facing version and a pharmacy team member. So not just the pharmacist, but really pharmacy assistants, technicians, students, interns, even the front shop staff. And the goal was really to increase awareness of access to medication and what NIHB covers. One of the key areas we've been focused on was over-the-counter medications that can be covered with a pharmacist recommendation and documentation, which I think is something that pharmacists don't necessarily realize, that beyond prescription medication, the OTCs can also be covered. And then we focused specifically on which patients would be eligible, how to bill for this, and really how to do that documentation of the products. And then just to kind of increase awareness, even through the podcast, a lot of items are covered. So things like NRT, spacing devices for inhalers, there is vitamins, prenatal vitamins, Plan B, contraception in terms of condoms, there's fungal creams, like so many over-the-counter items that we really don't even realize could be covered are covered.
And I would also add to that, for listeners who are unaware of NIHB, it stands for non-insured health benefits. And it is a health and drug plan that's available to First Nations and Inuit patients with a land claim organization. And so because it is a federal program, so it is available to First Nations and Inuit patients all throughout the country, so all provinces and territories. And it is accessible to pharmacies pretty easily. The corporate pharmacies do have already a relationship with NIHB and Express Scripts Canada, which is the company that does the more so the operational part of billing. And then for the private or the independent pharmacies on their website, the NIHB and Express Scripts Canada website, there is information on how you can establish a relationship where you can also bill for patients with NIHB. And in terms of NIHB client and what is used to bill this insurance, it is the number that is written on the Indian status card. If a patient comes in and asks and says that they have NIHB NIHB benefits or insurance through the federal drug plan, you can always ask for that card, and that would have all the information you need to bill it.
And I just want to clarify here as well, this is not something that is a new program in itself in terms of its base. It's something that's been existing for a long time. It's just something that's never really been talked about or pushed, which is really what makes it almost a shame that we're not promoting the availability and the use of this service.
And that's a great point. And yes, it has been around for a while. It is in no way new, and it is in no way related to minor ailments prescribing. We've been told by representatives from NIHB, and we've also seen in our survey that pharmacists who practice in areas where there is a larger community of Indigenous patients, they are oftentimes more aware of it. Whereas in Toronto, pharmacists might not be as aware of it just because proportionally they might have fewer Indigenous patients compared to patients that are non-Indigenous.
And I think that even if you don't have a lot of patients, like Max is saying, that have NIHB coverage, there's such a great opportunity because for that smaller proportion, you might not be as familiar with the program. So there's a lot to learn to be able to help in that respect. And I think there's just a lot of confusion because we deal with both provincial plans and federal plans, and then scope of practice is different. So it can be confusing for pharmacists, but I think a really important thing to know is that for the OTC recommendations, that's, like Max said, an aside from common ailments prescribing. These typically tend to be items that are available over the counter in the pharmacy, and it's just really making that recommendation to ensure the assessment's done and it's appropriate, but pharmacies can help their patients get coverage for them.
And I would also mention that this isn't anything different from what you would do for a patient who were to walk in and ask for an OTC recommendation anyways. It's just you documenting the process and you're able to bill it and have it covered for the patient. I mean, this is something that all pharmacists are doing anyways when someone comes up and says, can I have an allergy medication for my child?
Exactly. They're Schedule 2, 3, and U products. These are not Schedule 1 products.
And the dispensing fee that pharmacists can access through this program, what the expectation with that is that they put in the same care and same therapeutic attention when providing a recommendation for these over-the-counter products as they would for a prescription product that they might be prescribing under minor ailments, prescribing when that is available. And this type of awareness and the type of interviewing they would do to collect information to ensure that the over-the-counter product is appropriate for their patient could open doors to other therapeutic problems that they detect in the patient's drug therapy regimen, lack of immunizations, and can lead to meds checks, medication reviews, pharmaceutical opinions, immunizations. So really, it's an invitation to do more for the patient and to take a moment and provide patient-centered care to this one Indigenous client. And if we're all doing that for each Indigenous client we have, it does create a shift in practice where pharmacy is a stronger ally and has a better therapeutic relationship with Indigenous patients in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So not only just building a new script, so to speak, but also just building a new relationship with the patient, which ends up, you know, doing volumes for their health. We've talked a lot about this program. I guess we're going to put the link for it on our website, of course. But is there like an easy place for our listeners to find this program as well? Because I'm sure after talking so much about it, we do want to be able to access it.
Yes. So one of our new collaborators on this project is called MD Briefcase. So they specialize on creating continuing medical education for healthcare providers. And I reached, and I personally did an API rotation, so a pharmacy rotation with their company, and I reached out to two of their team members, Sarah and Jordan, and I asked them, you know, would you guys be interested in posting these infographics online for your pharmacy clients to see, but also for them to be available through a link for public members and for other healthcare providers that might be interested, for example, physicians that are referring Indigenous patients to their pharmacists for an over-the-counter recommendation, which oftentimes happens. And they've accepted, and they've offered to donate fees and resources to post these infographics online and to help with some marketing of them to make sure that they are available to as many pharmacy providers as possible. So that will be going up. Our first version of the infographics will be going up sometime in mid-October, and we will keep that updated, and those PDFs will be regularly updated and reviewed by ourselves and our collaborators at NIHB.
So there's basically no excuse not to learn about this and to utilize it in your practice.
Exactly. And one of the things that's nice about it being easily accessible, even though it was created by Pay and Whole Health, is that everyone can benefit from it. And one of the things that NIHB actually brought up to us was that having the patient-facing one-pager really helps because it can be provided to patients by physicians or pharmacists and family health teams or in the hospital to give them almost a support so that if they go into a pharmacy in the community that doesn't know about coverage, they can say, look, you need to go learn about this. I have this and I know I'm supposed to have coverage. Because unfortunately, there have been instances where the pharmacist didn't trust the patient, even though they know about their coverage. And so that can be just another barrier. And so we're hoping to really help patients be advocates for themselves, even though in an ideal world, we'll get to a point where they don't have to be, we can help them. But at least at this point, if they have that printout, which can be provided by pharmacy professionals, they can go in and feel like they have that support with them as well.
Yeah, and we're working on putting a link on that patient handout that can direct pharmacy professionals to the appropriate website. So the Express Scripts Canada now has a website where you can search up a medication and see an over-the-counter product and see if it's covered. And then NIHB also has some helplines that are available for any pharmacy providers that have questions.
Speaking about access to the NIHB program itself, do we have any stats on what that use looks like right now?
So we actually asked NIHB about this, and they said they have about 900,000 clients who are eligible for NIHB coverage. And then in terms of the pharmacists who participated in our survey, it really varied in terms of what percentage of their practice serviced clients of NIHB.
Yeah, we're pharmacists in the, like I said, in Thunder Bay and other areas where they are closer to larger Indigenous communities might have, you know, hundreds of prescriptions that they're billing to NIHB, whereas a pharmacist downtown might have only one or two. And we've used prescriptions billed to NIHB as a marker of the potential of having over-the-counter recommendations. So that was, it's not an exact number, but it shows that, you know, those clients are present and can benefit from this program.
The other thing to mention as well, for anyone who thinks that this task might be a little bit daunting to learn about, I want to also point out the fact that pharmacists are basically pseudo-experts when it comes to insurances anyway. So this is basically our forte in helping patients navigate the healthcare system and get coverage for their medications or otherwise now their over-the-counter products.
Yeah, and some of our pharmacists were wondering, you know, is this any different from billing a prescription? And these over-the-counter billings are exactly like you would bill a prescription, except, you know, if the pharmacist is recommending the product, you would write out the prescription yourself as you would with a verbal order that you're receiving from a physician, and you would bill it like any other prescription. And, you know, once again, we're very keen on making sure that Indigenous clients fully access these benefits and don't have to pay out of pocket for things that they don't have to. And just to give a bit of a history of NIHB, NIHB, its coverage being so vast, covering vitamins, analgesics, allergy medications, essentially with a new update that occurred with NIHB, all over-the-counter products. This is part of reconciliation as well. It's part of the federal government giving back to Indigenous patients and Indigenous clients. And so you as a pharmacy provider are making sure that that reconciliation is met.
And I just want to emphasize, this is not common ailments prescribing, because I know there has been some confusion in the past about the fact that we're writing out our own prescriptions or making a recommendation like this. It has nothing to do with common ailments prescribing. This is something that any pharmacist in Canada can do.
Yeah, and I would say the way I like to think about it is less like we're maybe writing out a prescription and more like we're writing out a documentation of a recommendation. I think sometimes that helps pharmacists with the fact that it's not a common ailment prescription, it's really documenting that recommendation. Although there are a lot of features that make it similar to a prescription with the drug name, the SIG, the METE, that kind of thing. And like what Max was saying, in terms of coverage for over-the-counter products, it really even has expanded recently from NIHB. It's not all products. There is a list of medications, but it's even larger than you'll see on the first version of our infographic, which just has some examples of what can be covered.
Yes, exactly. And if any pharmacy provider is not too sure, once again, Express Scripts Canada does have a website where you can, like ODB formulary, you can just put in the product name, and our update to the infographics will have a link to that site as well.
Yeah, I remember Tiana mentioned earlier that I had helped Whole Health with some of their presentations about Indigenous people's health. And I remember when I was doing my research, even day to day, there were changes. It is a very actively changing program. And there will be links again on our website that we will link to show you how to get more information about everything. But just be sure to know that there are changes happening day to day. So it's important to keep up to date on this stuff.
And I think that one thing I just recently thought of, like literally just at this moment, was that the great thing is that the more pharmacists that use this program and provide it to their patients, and the more patients that are able to use it, the more feedback can be given to the government in order to optimize the program further. Because without using the program, they don't know exactly what gaps there are in their coverage and what other things that they can provide for Indigenous people.
I completely agree with that. And I would also like to add that, you know, if an Indigenous patient goes to one pharmacy and they don't believe that they have these benefits, that totally disrupts the therapeutic relationship that pharmacy providers have with their patients. So the sooner that everyone's on the same page on these benefits, the sooner we can provide consistent care to patients, which really affects the trust that they have in healthcare providers.
On the topic of kind of increasing awareness again, Max, I know you're working right now with OCP as a complaints officer, but you also have a type of side gig, I suppose, with them as well. So I was wondering if you wanted to talk about OCP's commitment to Indigenous people's health as well.
Yeah, so I recently started working at the college as a complaints officer, and I was really happy to see that you know, all my managers, my coworkers have been very supportive of my personal, I guess, work in Indigenous health advocacy. And I was also surprised to learn that the college has made their own Indigenous cultural competency initiative. And this can be found on their website as well. They have a page dedicated on it. This really came from a college council meeting that took place in September 2019, where three opportunities were approved to cultivate Indigenous cultural competency among non-Indigenous council members, college staff, and registrants. Registrants being pharmacists, pharmacy students, pharmacy interns, pharmacy technician students, and all pharmacy providers, even those that aren't registered with the college, would benefit from the resources that the college would provide. So some of these include to develop a commitment to act. So the college will identify ways to address cultural inequities, to improve patient outcomes, and strive to build relationships with Indigenous communities and others groups focused on Indigenous health. This is right from their website. A page on the college's website with resources on inclusive services that the college expects of registrants for their Indigenous clients. And then to begin all council meetings at the college with a land acknowledgement. So the college has made a commitment for these 3 points, and we're currently working on it, working towards them to ensure that they're met. But there's definitely more to come. And the college has a website, as I mentioned, on Indigenous cultural competency that will outline everything that's available. So at the college, as I mentioned, I'm working as a complaints officer in the conducts department. And something that we see in our department is complaints regarding fraudulent claims towards insurances, so ODB, which is a public insurance, but also private insurances. So whenever there's an audit and discrepancies are identified in billing practices, the college does receive a complaint, and we do investigate those complaints. And I'm just pointing that out, you know, for pharmacy providers that will be writing out recommendations for over-the-counter products, just make sure you are following guidelines that are set out by NIHB and Express Scripts Canada. So these the recommendations you write are being billed, and you are being given a dispensing fee reimbursement. And just make sure you just want to make sure that you're in line with the practices that are expected on that.
Again, check out that NIHB optimization program that you guys helped make, so that would be so that you don't make any of those errors.
So now we've talked about pharmacy practice and what that means in terms of applying what we've learned so far about Indigenous health and the NIHB optimization program. So let's talk about what we learn in pharmacy school at the faculty when it comes to Indigenous health.
So as you've mentioned, we are all recent graduates, I would say, of the University of Toronto's pharmacy program. And I can't really speak on Waterloo's program and what they're teaching, but I think we can all agree that we do receive some education on social determinants of health. We do have courses, health systems that are dedicated to that. And they have mentioned in those courses sort of Indigenous health. I had a great lecture on that by Elise Paradis and Lisa Dolovich, where they did have Indigenous speakers come in. And our class really appreciated that, to have people of Indigenous backgrounds in healthcare. So these were healthcare providers or people in healthcare to present. And there is a third year elective on Indigenous health, which has very few seats. And I personally wasn't able to actually find a place in that course. It's very competitive because a lot of people are interested in learning more about Indigenous health. So I would say that expanding that course to being from, you know, just an elective to one that's fully available and can fit all pharmacy students, however many students there are in the cohort, pharmacy students would definitely be interested in that. And currently what's happening is that pharmacy learners that are interested in increasing their Indigenous cultural competency and their awareness of Indigenous healthcare barriers for Indigenous patients, they're joining our initiative, Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health. And while that's great, it's definitely not a replacement of having a set curriculum that teaches foundations on Indigenous health and how to be an Indigenous health advocate as a pharmacy provider.
Yeah, so to recap, the faculty does have some courses that do teach about Indigenous people's health, but there could definitely be steps to improve said curriculum and said participation in the education.
And I don't mean to speak on behalf of the faculty, but I do know that they're currently investing in increasing this education. And I know some educators like Marie Rocky are working on developing modules to increase that education for all students rather than just the electives. And I think if we even look at the alumni and networking events that will be coming out in early 2021, there's a focus on increasing awareness of inclusion and diversity and cultural competence. And then even when we look at the awards that the faculty offers, I know there's work going on as well to increase awards for specifically Black, Indigenous, and people of color, so that there's increased representation within pharmacy, so that some of our patients can see themselves in their healthcare providers, which there is research to support increases the therapeutic relationship as well and the care that people receive.
I think we've spoken a lot about awareness and increasing just the general population's awareness of it. And Tiana, I want you to speak about whole health initiatives that have been done to increase awareness on Indigenous people's health, as well as maybe some of the other initiatives that might be going around at the at whole health.
So my personal interest, which I think has been supported by Whole Health in now incorporating this formally into our programs really started by seeing Tanya Talaga, who's an Anishinaabe Canadian author and journalist, present at a Health Quality Ontario conference. And she spoke about her book, Seven Fallen Feathers, which is a true story about seven young Indigenous students who have died in Northern Ontario in recent years, actually. And so when I heard about that and their experiences, I thought, okay, as pharmacists, there's more that we can do. And I brought that back to Whole Health to say, okay, how can we support our community pharmacists, support their Indigenous patients? And some of the things we started, and these are small steps. So these are things that I think all pharmacy professionals can take as first steps. And then there's even more that we obviously can do. But we started just increasing the representation even in our flu posters. So we realized that there wasn't very much diversity in those. And now we've made the conscious effort of having representation in the images that are used and the languages that we use as well. We had the webinar that Chris had mentioned that talked about a bit of Indigenous people of Canada's mental health and some cultural competence. Our staff at the head office got trained by the Indigenous Reconciliation Group and Rose LeMay over there, and learning about how to integrate that knowledge into the resources we develop. And we also provided some infographics. I love the infographics, obviously, to our pharmacies about resources that they can use to increase their knowledge. So we made resources available to help pharmacists find Indigenous authors and books and podcasts that they can follow and listen to and read about so that they increase their awareness as well.
Yeah, and I was really happy to see all the initiatives that Whole Health was undertaking, which is why myself and Pei, we identified Whole Health as a group that we could collaborate very closely on these initiatives. And Tiana mentioned how, you know, every pharmacist can sort of learn this education and put it into their practice and have a positive impact. I would go a bit further to say that every pharmacist is also a citizen that can, you know, vote. It is voting season, who can select candidates who are interested in pursuing programs and policies aimed at remove or dismantling prejudice that's currently in place in healthcare systems and in also in political systems that are working against Indigenous patients and Indigenous clients and people. As you know, OCP, OPA both have elected bodies. And so really identifying candidates that are focused on addressing Indigenous health. As I mentioned, it was the council in 2019 that brought forth Indigenous cultural competency to the college. And we can do even more of that in other professional bodies where there's elected members, and in city council and school board trustees and parliament. Really, a lot of these factors that are affecting Indigenous people are in policies, are in writing, in constitutions. And as elected members do have the ability to address those and work towards, I guess, transforming them in a way that's more productive and beneficial for Indigenous people.
And I think we can do that even within pharmacy. Like, OPA elections happen, OCP elections happen. You can look at your candidates who have an interest in this area and who are doing things to increase accessibility and health equity. And I think that's really important from a voting perspective. And then there's things that we can do even in our own lives. For example, when we see microaggressions or when we see racism happening, like, it's the time to step up and say something. And one of the things that I learned in training, because I find I often just freeze on the spot and I'm shocked no matter how many times I see it. And I think part of that is coming with the privilege that I am a Caucasian able-bodied person. And so I typically don't know how to respond. And one of the things that Rose LeMay, who's the CEO of the Indigenous Reconciliation Group, said, you can just say that. Say, wow, I'm shocked. I don't know how to respond to that. Just to create a bit of a pause, let yourself think, and alert the person that what they've said isn't okay, and start that conversation.
I think one example that I will give, it doesn't have to do with necessarily in Indigenous health, but it was one of those times where something happened where I felt shocked and I just had to say something. So it was a situation where I was a student and I worked with someone who didn't want to give a naloxone kit to someone. And even though that person was on opioids and it was prescription based, they had come and they had asked for one, and the person turned them away and said, oh, it's okay, you don't need one. And when I was working the I was absolutely stunned, right? Like, how can you turn that away from someone? It's something that's life-saving. So I called him out. I said, you shouldn't have done that. And I engaged in what was like basically an argument with the person as to why they shouldn't have done that. And then when they had gone for lunch or for break, other people in the pharmacy started telling me that I said the right thing and that that wasn't okay. So it just takes that one person to say something and to step up, to speak for the other people who are around, and to also affirm that what's going on isn't right.
Yeah, and that one person is never alone. There's people in this world that are really invested in addressing, calling out prejudice and actively working against it, and they can always find help and supporters and, you know, work together towards that goal.
Yeah, I think Faizan's example is especially important too, because we see it amongst our fellow healthcare professionals. It's not something that's limited to, you know, just people on the street that we see. It's our friends, it's our family, it can be anyone. It can be ourselves as well. So it's important to realize that and to call it out when you see it.
I think part of it is also being aware that it's okay to make mistakes too. And so I know sometimes people shy away from doing things like even initiatives that increase awareness because you don't know if you'll make a mistake. And I think one important thing to know is that when you make a mistake, recognize it, be okay with apologizing for it, and then move on. But I don't think that should stop you from trying.
So in our previous season, which talked about the theme of pharmacist identity, we asked all of our interviewees what they thought a pharmacist is in one sentence. And similar to that, we wanted to ask you guys in terms of the theme of the season, which is the future of pharmacy, what other modalities do you think pharmacists can utilize or optimize to provide optimal patient care?
I would say that for pharmacists to improve their patient care, a good step towards that would be to, as we've mentioned, to gain better cultural competence. And that doesn't necessarily have to be through designed educational campaigns like ours, the NIHP Optimization Program. It could be just, you know, reading the news, sharing stories, reading books. As Tiana mentioned, Seven Fallen Feathers by Tanya Talaga. We actually, during our survey with the NIHP Optimization Program, one of the prizes for participation on our feedback survey were 3 copies of that book. And so, you know, we're definitely not in the position where we're asking Indigenous patients who've had some sort of bad interaction with healthcare or some sort of historical trauma to speak out, but we are connecting pharmacy providers with information and stories that are already out there. And I'm a strong believer in that the story sharing process will inform pharmacy providers, and they'll have something to remember when they're providing care, and they'll avoid some of those wordings and some of those things that they've heard about. Personally, myself and Tiana as well, when we were meeting with NIHP, they mentioned some of the wordings that have affected their clients negatively in the past. For example, the client being asked for their number. Historically, Indigenous people were assigned numbers and they were, you know, treated as numbers. And so to avoid that, ask for their card instead. Just small things like that that you learn about by going to different cultural events, speaking to Indigenous people. You know, don't be shy. Don't be in a position where you're like, I haven't done my research, so I can't speak to this Indigenous person. As long as you go into it, you know, without sort of having preconceptions and having an agenda, they're very open to speaking to you and to giving you some input as healthcare providers. And they really want to do that because for them, seeing how you're interested in learning more about them and that you're personally vested in advocating on their behalf outside of a healthcare setting, it means a lot.
To summarize, it would be make sure that you're a curious and constant lifelong learner, not just about drugs and, you know, the things that we love day to day as pharmacists, but also about different cultures and different people as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think some ways, kind of building on what Max had said, some ways to do that online learning and continuous learning is even to participate in ceremonies in your community, things like attending a smudge, also taking it upon yourself to do that, learning even a bit of an Indigenous language for a group that might be around your pharmacy, even knowing a few greetings, that can go a long way. Some of the resources that I really like, I know we've mentioned Seven Fallen Feathers quite a bit, but there's also books like 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act. There's podcasts like Unreserved or Native Currents. And there's also free e-learning that are offered through universities like the University of Alberta, UBC, and the University of Toronto. And then one other thing I'd say that pharmacists especially can do, especially in community practice, is to try to recruit and retain Indigenous staff. So engaging with relevant local organizations to really advertise positions that can be available, and even putting it in the job posting that you are especially looking for people from different backgrounds. And then that can help, again, increase access to people learning about pharmacy or pharmacy technicians as a potential career path, and hopefully help to increase representation within the faculty and the profession.
So we also talked about how this program itself is not a new thing, and it's something that was completely within our scope of practice, just something that was heavily underutilized. Do you find that there are other places where we have not seen yet the full extent of our scope of practice or our expertise, where we could improve upon or optimize as you have?
I think there's a lot of areas where we could start practicing really to our full scope, even in our current scope. I know, especially in Ontario, there's a long way to go in terms of what our future scope could look like, but embracing the full extent of our scope, one of the areas that I'm really passionate about is even adult immunization. So making sure we screen all of our patients for things like pneumonia, shingles, HPV, meningitis, things that might not be publicly funded, but a lot of patients have access through private coverage or might even be open to paying for it because of the significance it can have on their health. And I think this is especially important in populations where they might not have as much interaction with the healthcare system. So being that accessible pharmacist and taking that opportunity to optimize their health from a health promotion perspective in those interactions.
Yeah, and for myself, in my community practice, I'm really happy to have these COVID-19 tests. And I believe that this type of point-of-care testing would be really, it would make healthcare accessible to a lot of people who currently don't have a family physician or who don't want to go into a busy walk-in clinic. And Pharmacy Awareness of Indigenous Health has worked towards making it aware to Indigenous patients that COVID-19 asymptomatic pharmacy testing, they automatically qualify for that service. And just expanding pharmacist scope and making sure those that need it most, those communities that have been underserved, are getting full benefits from it.
And I think one thing, again, from community pharmacy perspective, really increasing awareness of options for patients. And so one thing that I really like to do, and I know a lot of my colleagues at Whole Health like to do, is go out into community organizations. Now it's a bit difficult during COVID, but doing things like school-based presentations. Those can be on topics like hand hygiene. It can be on things like contraception, so that people know what their options are and people can take their own advocacy approach to it. It can also be going out into retirement groups and letting them know about their health options. And so really reaching out to your community. And I think one of the examples of that is even Max. He's reached out to different Indigenous groups around his area and done presentations.
Yeah, so we did a sexual health presentation to the Native Child and Family Service of Toronto for their Indigenous youth. We also did a series of opioid crisis workshop series at the Native Canadian Center by Bloor and Spadina. And in both experiences, we found that the community members at those centers were very welcoming of us. Don't really get a lot of pharmacy learners or pharmacy professionals going in to provide these service. And really enjoyed getting this type of health education outside of a busy community pharmacy setting where there's other people around, we're discussing matters that are still stigmatized by some people in our society, and really being able to ask whatever they want in a setting that they're comfortable in their home base.
And I've had very similar experiences talking about slightly different topics, but at the Young Street Mission, for example, going to do topics about drug coverage, because they have had issues with patients who are experiencing homelessness accessing medication, even though they do qualify for things like ODB or NIHB. So reaching out to those organizations, because even the same thing, they didn't even have an official role for a pharmacist volunteer, but kind of bringing it to them, there's a lot of opportunities that can be developed. And then I think that enhances Canadians' awareness of pharmacists and the health care that they can provide.
And hopefully that'll lead to people in those communities applying to our profession and becoming well represented themselves. And that's, a lot of people ask, you know, pharmacy awareness of Indigenous health, is anyone on it Indigenous? I think that's what a lot of people want to know. And unfortunately, through those three cohorts that we've had, not a single member has been of an Indigenous background. And our legacy, our hope is that one day our initiative will be completely taken over by an executive team where they're all of Indigenous background.
One day we will see that. I guess a lot of pharmacists kind of just sell themselves short is what it sounds like. We doubt ourselves a lot and don't see ourselves as educators. So there's a lot more that we can do within our current scope of practice. Like you guys mentioned, a lot of just education or even just working within our current scope of practice with providing immunizations to people that do need them, just who may not be aware of it.
I can definitely say that our two speakers here are very, very inspiring members of the pharmacist community. And definitely, I hope that our listeners out there have been as inspired as we have, not just in their daily, day-to-day practices, but as a citizen of Canada as well, which I think is very important to note. So thank you guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on. And yeah, we believe that pharmacists can change the world, and together we can make things better for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having us. I think it can be really hard as pharmacists because there is so much going on and there are so many things to do. But I think this is just an example of kind of one small step towards truth and reconciliation.
Off the Script is produced by Tom Fung, Faizan Baig, and Chris Tse. Quality control is done by Stephen Guan. Mixing and editing is done by Chris Tse. Off the Script is a podcast focused on education and entertainment. However, we are not a replacement for real medical advice. Please see your local healthcare professional if you have any questions about your own personal health. Thank you to Sean Singh for creating our introductory music, and thank you to Chill Hop Music for allowing us to use their music in our intermission and ending. You can find more great songs at chillhop.com/listen.